I just will start off. I know it might be a little bit of a surprise to see me here versus the governor, but I got a call from the bullpen and came in to pinch hit this morning. They needed a weak-armed right-hander, and so I am here. I hope everyone had a wonderful Thanksgiving. Mine was good. We had a house full of folks. They're all gone now, so it's particularly quiet, and I sleep a little better. But I did want to just wish everyone that, and also wish a belated happy birthday to the comptroller. I believe you had a birthday.
Yeah. Thank you.
He said no gifts. No gifts. Okay. And the treasurer has a birthday next week.
Oh, boy. I do. Actually, closer than that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Today's the 4th. Yeah. So the weekend, you're going to have a wonderful birthday. So good. Madam Treasurer, your birthday is coming.
My birthday, as some might remember, is December 7th.
Yes, day of living infamy. Right.
Yes. But I just want to say it's good to be here. We live in very interesting times. I want to thank the Secretary of Natural Resources, who with the University of Maryland yesterday sponsored a meeting on climate change with the ambassadors from
the EU?
France. Okay. Yeah, France, Spain, Portugal, Sweden. Who recognize that they can reach out to Maryland, even if some of the folks in Washington are not quite as up on things as they should be, that Maryland is the place to come. And it was a good meeting.
Yeah, the governor hosted all of the EU ambassadors yesterday morning at Government House. It was fascinating to have all of them in the same place. A lot of coordination that took place, particularly the administrator from the EU and what she had to go through to get everyone here at one time. But that was very good, and there were a number of people that we had met previously, the Estonian ambassador who had met in Estonia when he was the defense secretary, the ambassador to Greece, who was at the Greek Day in Baltimore with him, and the Lithuanian ambassador was another one. And I gave praise to the ambassador from Belgium because his national team is ranked by FIFA as the number one real football team in the world. Yeah, for those less informed, they call it soccer. I always tell the governor that he just does not really understand the intricacies of the beautiful game, and it takes a certain level of intelligence to really get to that. So, not to put him down, but that's just what we have to do.
Well, it is interesting that apparently there's a push on the part of the EU leaders to reach out beyond Washington,
yes,
to the states.
Yes, yes it is. And a number of the countries, and not just the EU, the other countries, they realize that, you know, the real action happens in the states.
We're still here.
And we're still here. It is a collection of states. We are the United States. So.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor, and thank you for the birthday wish. And I also want to thank Mr. Barriano for calling me at 6:30 in the morning, wishing me a happy birthday. Much appreciated. Yes, I hope everyone had a good Thanksgiving holiday. Yesterday, I had the good fortune to preside over the first meeting of the Task Force on Electronic Devices, or EFACS, as we're calling it. This is the Vaping Task Force. We met on the campus of the University of Maryland College Park. I formed this task force, which is comprised of public health experts, industry representatives, elected officials, and other key stakeholder groups. In response to the alarming news about the reports of deaths and illnesses resulting from vaping nationwide. Of particular concern to me is the meteoric rise of vaping among young people, especially since we know very little about the short-term and long-term impacts of vaping. We had a very productive meeting yesterday. I'm grateful to the nearly 40 members of the task force for committing their time and effort into helping us figure out what Maryland can and should do when it comes to regulating this rapidly growing industry. As the state's chief tobacco regulator, I'm committed to protecting public health and consumers, keeping any and all of these products out of the hands of kids. Over the next several months, the EFACS task force will seek to understand the explosive growth of this industry, the knowns and unknowns with respect to public health and consumer safety, and look at what other states have done to regulate the production, distribution, consumption, and sale of electronic smoking devices. I will say that obviously vaping is very popular, but to the extent that it's very popular among high school students and increasingly among middle school students, because these young people, according to the testimony yesterday, their brains are permanently changed by exposure to nicotine. Permanently, forever in their lives. And so, yes, there may be some benefit to a strictly regulated vaping product being available to adults able to make choices, but the testimony yesterday was really bracing that we are dropping the ball as far as the entire generation of young people that we're allowing to buy this stuff willy-nilly from our 6,000 or 7,000 retail establishments in Maryland. And over the internet, my staff person bought one of the most concentrated forms of nicotine, and he specifically asked that it be sent to his dog, 5-year-old dog, in his house. That's how he said the address. Whatever the dog's name was, it was Edward the dog at his residence. And there was no requirement of any kind of proof of ID or age or anything. So it's the Wild West. I would urge all of you out there to understand that vaping, which has gotten kind of a positive spin because people say it's combustible cigarettes are so much more dangerous, which they are, and this is a path off of combustible cigarettes. No. These nicotine delivery products are unbelievably risky, and we need, I think, as a state to follow what the feds and the other states possibly are doing. And I don't mean to go on about that, but a lot of us know young people who vape. Time out, guys. You don't want to reconfigure the synapses in your brain. So on that happy note, God bless everybody. I didn't mean to go on, but you know how this whole situation is. I would like to finish up by wishing my own birthday wishes to Treasurer Kopp. I wish I had a birthday on Pearl Harbor Day, because that would be very kinetic and exciting for me. But, Madam Treasurer, thank you. All my personal best wishes and many happy returns.
Very good, very good.
And I'm sure you have one sometime, too, but not this week.
Not this week. Mine is in the spring, and it's also a memorable day. And Bruce usually calls me on my birthday as well. Normally not at 6
o'clock.
Normally not that early, but there's usually a message there. I'd like to change the order a little bit.
Sure.
And start with general services, because we have a good mayor here.
Require some,
I'm sorry, what's that?
Changing with the room.
We can do that. We can do just the Gaithersburg.
Well, maybe we'll just we'll do... Does it, if we just do one item out of there first, since we have the mayor from Gaithersburg.
Nelson, to introduce his agenda. Go ahead, introduce your agenda.
Good morning, members of the board, Lieutenant Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, I'm Nelson Riker, the Deputy Secretary of General Services. The department is presenting 44 items today, including two supplemental, one hand-carried item. Item 32 is being withdrawn, and I have representatives here to answer any questions that you have at this time.
Okay. Before I get to 3CGL, I just want to point out with 1CGL. Yeah, I'm going to go through all 40-plus items one by one. 1CGL is a non-matching grant going to the Board of Directors of Arena Players. Arena Players is a historically African-American theater company in West Baltimore that is in dire need of repair, and so this is a well-needed grant that started as a capital item in the governor's budget that is going to go to this worthwhile artistic operation, and so I just wanted to mention that. If I go to 3CGL, we have Mayor Ashman here. Can you come up? And I see you have with you Chief Mark Soroka. I know Chief Soroka. It's good to see you, Trooper. He was the captain in the state police when I was at General Services, and we made a change in our police operation at General Services, and Captain Soroka came in to straighten out the police operation. He did a wonderful job, so you have a great man and a true law enforcement professional that's there running your police department.
Absolutely agree with that.
Good to see you.
I'd also like to recognize we have City Council Member Ryan Spiegel, who also happens to be
good
president
to
of Maryland Municipal League this year.
Yes, good to see you.
And our Intergovernmental Affairs, Michelle Potter. Thank you.
Hi. Thank you. Thank you. Do you want to tell us a little bit about this new police station?
Sure. It's not only is it going to be a new police station, it's also going to be there will be other municipal uses for the building, but the in terms of the police station project itself, currently our police department has its headquarters in a couple of townhouses that are connected.
Gaithersburg.
Gaithersburg now is the third largest city in Maryland. We've outgrown it quite a bit, and this new facility will have holding, it will have interrogation rooms, it will have a sally port for the transport and exchange of suspects, for lack of a better word. And it will be usable not only by our police, but by county police, Rockville police, Maryland State Police, whoever, you know, other, we will work in partnership with other forces. So we are greatly appreciative of the support from the state on this project. And, you know, on behalf of the city, we just say thank you.
Thank you.
Could I say, Governor, we received several calls from Senator Kagan on this project, which she supports extremely strongly, and she would have been here, but she had a conflict, but just wanted you to know.
Oh, okay. Good to see her.
Yes, we heard from Senator Kagan, too. We greatly appreciate it.
We all hear from Senator Kagan.
Positive things from Senator Kagan.
There are a lot of people to thank, including Senator Kagan and many others in the Assembly. But particularly, it started with the governor, and, you know, I personally want to say thank you.
I will let him know, and thank you. Okay. Good to see you. I'm just going to point out, and it's 4CGL. Like I said, I'm going through that. I skipped two, but now it's the Citywide Youth Development Image Center in West Baltimore. It's on North Avenue, and it's a program that was developed by a gentleman, Rashid Aziz, and he started with training young people on entrepreneurial skills. And those of you who've been in Baltimore any period of time, you may have seen the young people selling sorbet at some of the festivals over at State Center, as well as at 6 St. Paul. But they also have been trained in the garment industry, and they've done some subcontract work for Under Armour down at City Garage, And they're moving both of those operations to a new center, the Image Center, which is in West Baltimore. There's Rashid. Rashid, can you come to the podium and tell us a little bit about this project? I'm glad that you're here. I was just talking about it. Introduce yourself.
Lieutenant Governor, good morning. Peter Franchos, you got me on the hot spot.
I know, you just walk in and
all
I
right,
just...
So, thank you guys, Citywide Youth Development.
You need to introduce yourself for the record.
My name is Rashid Aziz. I'm the Executive Director of Citywide Youth Development. We're a nonprofit organization that focuses on creating solutions for crime and poverty through utilizing the tools of manufacturing and entrepreneurial skill. We're a non-traditional nonprofit. We choose to locate in the inner city and urban communities and develop a GDP for inner city urban communities. We want to, the Image Center, the Lieutenant Governor and the Assembly have granted us, and we appreciate the opportunity to develop a multi-million dollar economic development center, the first of its kind in the city of Baltimore. It will be a home to a 10,000 square foot center that has workforce development, enterprise development, a retail incubator, and a youth-run cafe. Our goal by year two is to create 100 jobs, but more importantly, our goal is to create industry and manufacturing industry right in the heart of West Baltimore or North Avenue. This is an ambitious plan, but this is something we already have enacted. Partners include Under Armour. Our goal is to be a subcontractor manufacturing Under Armour merchandise right in the heart of West Baltimore. Our goal also is to manufacture school uniforms right in the heart of West Baltimore. So we've been blessed with the ability to educate and teach young adults apparel manufacturing skills and revitalize the apparel manufacturing industry in Baltimore City. We really appreciate the opportunity. I'm ultra excited. And when people think of Baltimore City, we call the center Image, and the acronym is spelled E-M-A-G-E. That acronym represents entrepreneurs making and growing enterprises. Entrepreneurs making and growing enterprises. We want to change the image. So when people look at Baltimore City, when they look in the urban community, we want them to look at communities that are productive, and we want you to think of products that are manufactured right in the heart of West Baltimore. So that's why it's called the Image Center. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Very exciting.
Very good, very good. Yes, I had an opportunity to visit there 2 years ago when it was still just a concept and visit with what he was doing over at City Garage, but also at the facility. And then just a couple of weeks ago, we were back there where there's construction that is taking place right now that it should be open in the spring. So great, they're moving forward. I'm skipping five, six, CGL. I don't know if Mayor Poland is here. Is he here from Indian Head? Okay, then I'll skip that. But it's for the arts at the Black Box Theater. I had an opportunity to go to the Black Box Theater in Indian Head. There's a lot of good things happening there, and so very pleased by that. 11 CGL, Helping Up Mission. Very pleased that we're able to provide, or actually it's transferring some money that was previously there. That was previously appropriated to Helping Up. They are building a facility for women who are suffering from substance use disorder and or homeless. They have a facility now for men, but they're building a facility right there down the street from their current location in East Baltimore on the east side. And I'm very pleased with what they're doing there.
You missed the Children's Museum.
Oh, yes, the Children's Museum in Baltimore at Port Discovery. See, she's bringing me back. 8 CGL. Ah, okay. Oh. Please, come on up.
I didn't
realize that. There you go. That's because we skipped around.
I'm Jennifer Vanon with Port Discovery Children's Museum in Baltimore.
Good to see you.
Thanks for having me.
I haven't been down here in years.
Well, you should see it, because we just renovated recently, and it is very beautiful.
And yeah, but it would be a little creepy for me just to grab a little kid to go down there. I don't have any little kids anymore, so. No grandkids.
I'd be glad to show you around. Okay. So, we will use this round of funding for our beautiful historic home, which is Baltimore's Fish Market building. So we are located in the 1906 Fish Market, which was the last standing center market in Baltimore City. And it's 80,000 square feet, and it's beautiful, but we like to say its charm is also its challenge, right? And so we will use the money to fix the bricks and the mortar, which are falling apart and breaking, and our windows are leaking. And part of our building needs a new HVAC system, which is important for learning, but a challenge. So the Children's Museum provides hands-on learning for children throughout the state of Maryland, and we are a top-visited attraction, arts and cultural organization in the Baltimore metro area. We're grateful for the support of the state.
Very good. It's $1 million non-matching grant, and I'm very pleased to have this before us.
Thank you.
So thank you.
Thank you.
I have a question. This has to do with moving on to 17S. It's the Health Department, the Finance Center.
Yes, someone? John Cullen is here to answer your questions. John Cullen?
He may be in the hallway.
Pardon?
Oh, Dana?
Dana?
Well, really the question has to do with the capacity of the facility. It's a facility for those who are trying to get recovery for substance use disorder. Dana almost ran over the trooper in the back. I think he stopped you pretty quickly.
Good morning.
Good morning.
May it please the board. My name is Dana Dembro, Director of Procurement for the Maryland Department of Health. Mr. Controller, happy birthday. And Madam Treasurer, happy birthday to you as well for this coming Saturday. We're here with an inquiry about the finance. Dietary services.
Yes.
Happy to respond to questions.
It's not really on the procurement itself, but just the capacity of the facility. I know it's there. It's a treatment facility for those who are suffering from substance use disorder. Is it at full capacity at this time?
It is indeed. I spoke to the CEO this morning. They have 88 beds. They're all full.
Okay.
However, there is, as you probably know, there are a couple of adjacent buildings which are unused. One of them is ready for use and has 22 beds, and I think they're working something out with the local health department for immediate or short-term use of that facility.
The county was in those buildings? Or
I think that's the situation, but the finance center itself is 88 filled to capacity. They do have this opportunity that they're discussing.
This is in Allegheny County.
Yes, sir.
But the facility is open to statewide. It's not, but this would give us additional capacity for those who are in need of treatment and could go into that facility. I've been there a couple of times. One of the challenges that we have is when people leave the inpatient treatment, it's making sure that there's a warm handoff afterwards for outpatient and continued work and recovery, because it's an ongoing process that individuals have to go through.
That's insightful, Mr. Lieutenant Governor. It is a challenge to have somebody rehabilitated out in the woods in Cumberland, and then they return to their home environment, and you can have different forms of behavior that become renewed as compared to what happened at the finance center.
Right. It's just speaking to someone this morning who talked about a family member who just said, hey, I really can't come home, you know, because they're going back to the stimuli and the environment that they were challenged with. Okay, I just wanted to ask about that. We'll look into what's going on with the other facilities to see if we can expand capacity, because we know that that is a need in the state.
And you know that we are doing a facility survey statewide right now. You approved
yes.
Kraft and Associates doing a survey of the condition of all the facilities, so we're well into that, and Finan is very much a part of it.
Okay. And in the Whitsitt Center as well, I guess, too. The Whitsitt Center, which is on the shore.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
All of the Maryland Department of Health facilities are included in this master plan facility survey, including a description of the challenges in rehabbing some of the buildings that we own, which are vacant.
What's the timing of the survey?
It was within the last year that you approved a contract of about $1 million for Kraft and Associates to do the survey. So I think it's supposed to be completed probably within the next 2 or 3 months.
Are they're looking at the quality of the building, I mean the soundness,
yes.
maintenance?
We have some magnificent buildings owned by the state through the Department of Health. And some of them are designated historic structures, but they're full of asbestos, and there are some serious challenges about rehabbing them. So it's a shame to see them wasting away. But in the era 100 years ago, when the theory was to put everybody in concentrated facilities, we had these massive buildings,
right.
and we don't do that anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
So we have extra buildings.
Is there any environmental or climate change lens or criteria you can bring in when you look at the buildings?
There will be now. I'll take that back to Secretary Neal and
ask
that it be included. And we're constantly working with DGS for energy efficiency in our buildings.
Yeah.
And you see those routinely approved by the
Board. But to be able to have a survey like that, it's just one department, but it's a big department.
I'll have them make sure that they focus on climate change implications.
Yeah, the challenge is that with the existing buildings,
right.
and many of their buildings are old. And like you said, the ones that you've already mothballed are just, you know, sitting there wasting away.
Let me tell you, when I was first elected on appropriations, we went on site visits. You know that. And we went to some places where people were essentially kept in cages or beds that were this far apart, tied down to the beds this far apart. It was a while ago to everybody in this room, but it wasn't that long ago. And that's what these buildings, many of them, were. Thank heavens, a different era.
Yes.
And I don't understand why we would consider that historic, but that's, yeah. I mean, we need to yeah. know, but we need to know what happened, not necessarily yeah. that these old buildings, like in Crownsville is a good example. The building's just sitting there wasting away. I mean, with a fence around it, it looks like Chernobyl.
And it costs us a lot of money to
yeah,
provide security.
Yeah, and you got to make sure people, the kids or whatever, are not going inside those buildings.
Springfield is the same way.
Yeah.
They have magnificent brick buildings. If you're a fan of historic architecture,
mm-hmm.
it really will break your heart to look at those buildings.
But the cost of doing anything there is because of you have to strip out the asbestos. You have to strip out the asbestos before you're tearing it down. It wasn't it? There was a disaster movie a number of years ago, Nelson, that wanted to blow up one of the buildings out there.
We've had all kind of questions.
Yeah, there was some, yeah, it was yeah, like Die Hard or one of those movies years ago wanted to blow up the Springfield Hospital, but we would have had to clear out the asbestos before they could blow it up. We were like, yeah, tear it down. That'd be great. You pay for it. No, you get it ready. And so
we'll have the master facilities plan to you all soon.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I can ask more about Maryland Think in a little while.
I actually have a question on 18. If you're,
sure.
Since we're going through these.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's related to 18. It's the media contract for MDOT, MDA.
Christina.
Hi. I have no problem with this contract. But someone has raised the issue about the need to quickly start a media campaign for the census. The Complete Count Commission had been looking at this. The question is, can you use this sort of contract that we're approving now that's multi-year for essentially the same services?
Mm-hmm.
It was suggested by one of somebody on this commission, one of the cabinet secretaries, I think, but I'm not sure, that that maybe they could get a jump start by using this. Is that possible?
So Christine Eisler, I'm that MBA administrator. I will say that we are working with the Department of Planning, and so we're using MBA branch offices. So we have those computer screens that you see while you're sitting there waiting for a very short period of time, but still get the opportunity to see those screens. And so we'll be advertising for the census there. The Census Bureau has actually contacted us directly for two of our facilities to recruit for employees because they need part-time employees starting next year. So we are actively working with the Department of Planning and certainly anything else that we can do to support those efforts, because we do have branch offices located throughout the state. We're happy to do so.
Okay, so this is a question that came out of the blue at you.
Yes, I think our contract is more specific to communication related to highway safety in particular, and then our outreach for customer service. But certainly Department of Planning, I think, would probably be the better agency to respond specifically about the census.
I know planning is looking at some of our existing contracts that we have, particularly through Department of Commerce, where we have media campaigns through Commerce for business, to see if they can ride off of one of those contracts and issue task orders underneath it. So we can follow up with
this
planning.
This was just brought up yesterday, and it may be that the committee had a meeting yesterday.
Okay.
Right. And obviously, there's a sense of urgency.
Uh-huh.
We have to get going, and it needs a significant media. You keep looking like you want a media campaign.
Our SHA administrator just informed me that the Department of Planning is working with them on a marketing campaign.
You are.
We'll be bringing you back to the board to modify the scope.
Terrific.
Yeah. State Highway.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure we had for the record who was speaking over there.
I'm sure I speak for the board. If there's anything we can do to support this, it's something that has to get going now and means a lot to the state of Maryland in so many ways.
Thank you,
Kristen.
Thank you. Any questions before I get to 30? Okay. I'm just commending General Services for Small Business Reserve Program number 30 maintenance. I'd like to see more of those. Glad that you have it. 40 LT, the lease mod for, the comptroller's office. This is on 60 West Street. My question, because this came up a while ago, did you all rebid this? Because $32 a square foot seems high to me.
I'm going to ask Wendy Napier to come up and address your question.
Hi, Wendy. Wendy Napier, DGS Real Estate. Lieutenant Governor, for this lease, we actually have only a few, but there are maybe two other leases in our Annapolis portfolio where we're paying in that $32 range. We really try to negotiate the best deal we can, but the Annapolis market is limited. The comptroller office has been at this space for a few years now. This was just a slight expansion to increase their operations there.
Okay. Yeah, it just seems $32 a square foot.
I can share with you the few locations that are at that range.
Okay.
We do our best to keep these rates down, but unfortunately with limited inventory in Annapolis.
Yeah, how long has this office been at the location? It's been there.
Since this one's newer. This is since 2018.
Oh, okay.
So this is a newer.
Then this is the one that I was thinking about. Okay.
This office improves our access to the taxpayers and also removes what was perceptibly a security issue where we had it in the Treasury building and the services, and people obviously needed access to that, but we also need security over there. So this is something that will be there for a long, long time, and thank you, DGS, for doing a good job of representing us and getting the best deal. We're all tight with a dollar, but...
I guess Annapolis is just expensive now. So. It's gotten that way. Okay. Those Annapolitans. I have a question on 44. Thank you, Wendy. Thank you very much. 44 IT, this is my last question. This is Board of Elections. It's a task order. for additional routers. And I, is anyone here from the Board of Administrators? Oh, okay.
Mr. Byrne?
And Deputy Charles.
Ms. Charles.
Good morning.
Linda Lamone, State Administrator of Elections, and my deputy is Nikki Charleston, okay. And we're happy to be here. Thank you. Happy birthday, everybody.
Happy birthday, folks. I guess my question is, and I know that you need to get the routers, and is this due to the special election, or is it due to the same-day registration, or both?
Both.
Okay.
Primarily because of same-day voter registration going into effect for the special primary election.
Okay. How do we make sure that people don't double vote? How do you handle the same-day registration? Is it treated like the provisional ballots? How is that handled?
Well, we've never had it on election day. Right. During early voting, we have had it since 2010. I think some. And we have a network in place similar to what we're proposing for Election Day so that all the poll books are connected to one another in a particular early voting center, and then they are all connected to a server in my office. So the minute someone comes in and registers, all the poll books in that county and our server are updated so that if they went to another early voting center, they would be already registered, and if they'd insisted on voting, would get a provisional ballot, which would not be counted.
But how about they went to another county?
Same thing, they would be given a provisional ballot, wouldn't be counted.
But, I mean, if you voted in Baltimore County, you registered and vote in Baltimore County on that particular day, and then you go to Carroll County and vote and say, hey, I...
All the poll books are updated. So it's a constant updating of the database and the poll books across the state during early voting.
Okay. But this, now we're going to be same day.
Correct. So if they go to a precinct other than where they're supposed to be registered,
right,
they will be given a provisional ballot, which will not be counted.
All right. Okay. And so if it's, so if they're already registered on the same day, then they're supposed to go to, we typically go to our precinct.
Yes.
But if they go and register at a wherever and vote there, that we're assuring that they can't go to another location.
With this network in place,
okay.
Correct.
All right. Just a concern.
Understandable.
We've had challenges in the past.
Yes.
So, okay. Any other questions on general services?
Yes. I had an item 16. DGS.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
May it please the board, I'm still director of procurement for the Department of Health, Dana Dembro. This is our long-awaited QIO, or Quality Improvement Organization, which measures about half a dozen outcomes that are mandated by CMS. And I'll be happy to answer questions about the procurement. We also have substantive experts here with us, Valerie Roddy, who is Director of Fiscal Services and Operation for the Developmental Disabilities Administration, and Bernie Simon is here as well. He's the Deputy Secretary for the DDA. We'll be happy to respond to any inquiry you may have.
Well, thank you very much, and obviously it's a very important mission of the Department of Health, but it is almost an $8 million contract to an out-of-state firm to provide strategic counsel, and I'm just wondering, what exactly is this firm going to be doing that we are not doing in-house right now?
Bernie Simon, Deputy Secretary of DDA. We have had, throughout, even predating my time at the Developmental Disabilities Administration, an audit finding where we have not gone out and looked at the provider community to see if they were actually providing the services that we thought they were. This finding has been going on since about 2013. This is one of the areas within this quality improvement organization. A quality improvement organization, I'd like to just explain that, is a designation by the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services. One of the lines that we put in there, the responsibilities, is for the successful contractor to work with the Developmental Disabilities Administration and apply through our state Medicaid office, the CMS, to get a higher match rate. So instead of giving a 50-50, we would get a 75% on some of the activities. So we're looking at, which is why we went with the Quality Improvement Organization.
And the second losing bidder was 72% higher, I think, in their bid. Is there any concern that this organization that we're awarding the contract to may not be able to perform?
There is indeed a natural concern when you have a price spread, which I've never seen a range like this, from $8 to $36 million. And it's not as though there's an outlier that's low or an outlier that's high. They're spread across that huge range. I had sufficient concern that I personally called the representative of the public consulting group who submitted the proposal, and I told him, you saw your competitor's prices. You are way low. We all understand that. Are you sure you didn't leave something out? Can you do this job and do it in a superior fashion? He said, I recently dispatched my pricing team to reexamine our proposal price. We priced it as we determined was fair and appropriate. We included everything, and I'm totally confident that we can do the job in a superior fashion. That came from his voice, and I'm satisfied that we're going to save the state a lot of money and still get excellent service.
Excellent. I have a lot of confidence in Delegate Dembra.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah. So thank you for keeping an eye on it.
Thank you.
And I also wanted to just mention item 14S, which is a contract to make payments to seven contractors to perform something called revenue-generating unclaimed property audit services. Even when I read that, I'm in charge of it. I didn't know what it was. So, I mean, I know what it is, but the title's quite a...
Do we have someone mouthful. From the comptroller's office to come up?
Anyway, this is a group of contractors that we use to particularly focus on out-of-state unclaimed property that's being held by financial institutions that should be returned to Marylanders. We pay them on a commission basis. It's proved to be enormously successful for identifying assets that are being held out-of-state that should be returned to the comptroller and tried. And we make every effort to reunite their money with Marylanders. Here come my crack team coming up right now. So I have no, obviously, questions about it. I just wanted to indicate that since I was elected, we have returned $800 million in unclaimed property to Marylanders. We have about currently, right now, if you can believe this, and this is why the contractors are so well compensated, we have... about 17.1 million accounts, individual accounts, worth $1.8 billion in our custody. So, yes, I love the lottery. It's a great thing. But, you know, you don't win all the time and you have to actually pay money. This is so much more of an opportunity for Marylanders if they could go to our website at MarylandTaxes.gov and click on the unclaimed property icon. All of the 17.1 million active accounts are listed alphabetically. Have at it, because you, your friends, your family, your neighbors, somebody that you know is going to be on that list if you have the time to peruse parts of it. And the money is your money, and we'd be happy to reunite Marylanders with it. And, of course, it's tax-free. So $1.8 billion. Please. I see American Joe Midashevsky over there nodding his head. Yes. Joe, you know, let me know.
Show him money.
Yeah, and to the team that just walked in, thank you very much for running a great operation, because a lot of states obviously do not advertise their unclaimed property because they would just as soon not have the obligation paid for. I think that's human nature, but we go to considerable lengths to advertise the availability of user-friendly tools And the fact that we're able now to come up with life insurance premiums that obviously the companies would just as soon, since nobody's claiming it, just to not have to pay it out. But there are a lot of heirs that are grateful once we are able to identify it and tell them about it. Yeah, that's fine. You can come up if you want to, but you don't have to.
He started to walk up, and then he did an about face, and he's out of here.
What's his name?
Yeah, okay. So.
Governor, may I just, since we're discussing this item 14S, make a note of the fact that the record was corrected this morning before the meeting. There's five places on that item where it actually says billion, and it's supposed to say million. That's and the board record has been changed to million in those five places where it says billion. Thank you.
$14 billion.
Yeah, it says commission on $140 billion in receipts. Yeah. I was excited about that. But you're correct about the $1.8 billion. You're
Thank
absolutely
you.
Correct that you've corrected it. But overall, these billions are supposed to be millions.
And if anyone has an anecdotal note of success that they got money for themselves or for found some for Governor Hogan or something, let me know, will you? Because we're always interested in advertising that this fund exists for Marylanders to claim.
All right, very good.
Thank you.
I have a question, Governor, since we went back on 12C. The Maryland Archaeological Conservation Laboratory.
Right.
But we had the opportunity to visit. It's a fascinating place. Mm-hmm. I really recommend if people haven't been down there in Jefferson Patterson Park, they should go. But my question really is, apparently there was a project for a couple million dollars to redo the roof, right? And
that's correct.
And now you're coming back for a another project that looks to be very closely related to the first one. And the question was, why? I mean, what happened? Why can't we do it right the first time?
So, good morning. For the record, I'm Lauren Buckler, Assistant Secretary for Design and Construction with DGS. There's a multi-step process going on. We had a project in long-term facilities renewal to redo stuff in that building. We got mold in the building before we got to that project. We had to remediate the mold. Then we had to figure out what caused the mold. We did an assessment. We figured out there was HVAC issues. There was building envelope issues. Then we did a project to address the HVAC issues. This is the project to address the building envelope issues. So you've seen this building come back multiple times as we've had funding come up for the project, as we've found issues with the building, and done different things. We have worked closely with DVM on funding for this. We still do have a project in the budget to do more with this facility, but we've piecemealed out the parts that we need to do right now to keep it operational.
Don't a series of Band-Aids in a row end up costing more than doing an operation correctly the first time? Completely the first time.
Sometimes. Unfortunately, the state has a long backlog of maintenance that we are working through. We're working on a lot of things at DGS to deal with that moving forward. But this is years of...
Well, we are where we are now. You've heard me say this before. I beat the same drum so many times. But if there were a way of looking at it, and I understand you have to have priorities, I understand you also need funds, although under capital debt affordability we actually could put more into building maintenance if we chose to. That's a priorities question. But when it ends up costing more money and interfering with the operations at an agency, I just don't understand why we keep on this way.
So we are doing much better. DGS presented in front of the Capital Debt Affordability Committee.
Capital Debt.
Capital Budget.
Budget and Management.
Yes,
right.
A couple months ago, and brought a great graph that I can forward to you that shows that our funding has gone up exponentially in the last couple years towards maintenance, which is
very good.
Which is a result of a lot of great people helping us out, and thank you, Lieutenant Governor, for understanding
this issue. Helps when you have a Lieutenant Governor with General Services.
Thank you. Thank you for helping us move this issue forward.
It's an investment to save money.
Yes.
I mean,
yes. So our funding has gone up. Our backlog is going down for the first time ever since we started tracking the backlog. So we are making progress. We've got a lot more to go, but we are starting to make progress. This issue started in 2015 in this building, so we are correcting this building. You've seen it come back multiple times because there's phases to this correction.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great enterprise. It's a basically fine building as far as I can tell, but this it's just such a great case.
Well, government does it, and it's not just us. The university system, when you look at their backlog, they are in a terrible situation as well. The federal government does the same thing. It's that it's the first place that gets cut when times are lean, and it's the last place to get additional money when times are fat, because there's always some program, priority, something, some new, you know, it still does, but we've kind of changed that. When we first came in, and particularly at the university system, it would be, oh, we got to fund this new building in College Park because this donor is putting money into it. But the donor was going to put in 10% of the total cost. The building was going to cost $200 million. They're putting in $20 million. And it's like, so? You know, you don't get your name on the building for 10% of the cost, but that's how they had been operating. But at the same time, the other buildings were falling apart. So I'll get off my high horse on that. But
and I know, Lauren, that you're on this. I get it. But it's just such a...
Yeah.
Another point about this one that has come up several times in other ones is you were first brought in because of the problems with mold. And I know I'm playing the same tune, but with climate change, all over the country, we're seeing that mold is an increasing problem. And we know where we're going to see it more and more. You talk about the university system. They just sunk $11 million into Towson to try to deal with mold and prevent mold. Do we have any particular program, again, looking at the impact of climate change, but specifically mold-related? Because apparently once you start mold, you open up, you've got to redo walls, you've got to redo roofs, you've got to change the whole envelope, really. How do we get ahead of it?
So what we did do, we added to the budget last year, thank you, Lieutenant Governor, funding for roofs and building envelope within our facilities renewal program so we could deal with those projects that have been sitting on the backlog, because if we don't get to those, we end up with mold problems in the building. So we're expediting some of those projects so they don't sit there and create other problems in our buildings. So we're trying some other things and trying to stop it from happening.
I appreciate that. At some point, I think we should have, I know this looks like micromanagement, and I don't mean it to, but a presentation on how we are dealing with these problems and how we're going to get ahead of them, because otherwise we're going to keep spending our money on the individuals.
Sure. We can
put
something together.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay. Any other questions on general services?
No. Move approval.
Second.
Well, in favor, thank you, General Services. And thank you all for indulging me. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Chief Soroka. Good to see you, sir.
Take a nap now.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, it's my same song is that, you know, maintenance just always gets deferred and it gets pushed back. And
like training.
Training? Yeah. And then travel. Which travel should be first, probably.
Yeah.
but it's not looking at your operations and not thinking.
If you're departing, can you leave quietly, please, so we can continue the meeting? The meeting is not over. Please, please.
John, you saw that? Sorry to put you on the spot.
Good morning, Lieutenant Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. We have 17 items on the Secretary's agenda. We have 3 reports of emergency procurement.
Okay. I have a question on item 8. And this was a... This was approved. This is a.
Calling Ms. Butler, right? It's designing standards. I know she worked with Gabe Knoll. So these are the diaper changing facilities in state buildings. DGS was to design standards, which they have done, and they're putting in the manual, and they passed it through the procurement advisor because the university system and the Department of Transportation have to follow these diaper changing facilities standards in the state buildings.
Good. My question is, would the $30,000 seems pretty low. In terms of renovations, is that in the statute or is that regulatory? In terms of being considered substantial renovation,
I believe that was in the statute.
Okay, that seems long. And then there's
that didn't come from DGS.
That didn't come from DGS. Mm-hmm. And then the question, and I'll turn to Nelson, but both of you know this. The expansion of the women's restroom here in the State House, does it now fall under this statute?
So what we did recently is install diaper changing stations on the first floor in the men's and women's public restrooms in the ADA stalls.
So there are diaper changing stations
in this building accessible, which is great.
Okay. All right. I was concerned because those bathrooms are small, and so you wouldn't. But if you did it in the public, then you've met the requirements. Okay.
Within the building, we're good.
Yes. Okay. That's fine. The benefits of having a woman speaker.
Within the building, we're good. It sounds like something else was
going to follow. Restrooms within the building. There are facilities in the restroom.
Yeah. The statute says that at least in the building, in the building, not every bathroom has to have changing facilities.
Great statute.
Yeah.
Great.
But the benefits, I was going to say, of having a woman as speaker is that the women's bathroom and the house side was small and didn't have as many stalls. This is bathroom talk morning radio. And so she brought it to the attention of the State House Trust to expand the number of stalls in the women's bathroom on the house side, taking away a stall from the men's room. But to add to the women's.
Great idea.
So.
I was there when they built the first one.
I think you would appreciate that.
They actually took it away from the men's room to start with.
Okay. So further expansion.
Yes.
And at the same time, we're building an outhouse for the men. For
That's okay.
That's okay. All right. Any other questions on this?
Yes. A2, please.
A2. Oh, yes. Yes. Oh, I have a question on that, too. Thank you.
That is a Department of Transportation emergency procurement support for the Oracle software, the databases that they have at MDOT. So Mr. Mark Nugent is here on behalf of the Department of Transportation.
Good morning.
Morning.
So just to cut to the chase here, Mark, is the department allowing Oracle to select the vendor through the bidding process? Because I take it what this emergency award is because they're not going to deal with the folks that have a contract award
to? There was a task order under the COTS contract competitively procured. What happened was as MDOT went through the proper procurement process, competitively bid, when we got to, we awarded it, but however, we came to an impasse with do it in Oracle over the state's terms and conditions, which led us to an impasse that where we were put into an emergency situation, Oracle was not going to let the vendor that we had selected sell those services to the state, so therefore we were left to go with Mythics, the incumbent, and we extended the current agreement with them for 2 months because we found ourselves in this emergency situation because these were critical services that NDOT could not be without.
Them. No problem with you, Mark, but I guess do it. What's the story? Is Oracle in charge of this procurement?
No, my name is, for the record, Lance Shine. I'm the Deputy Secretary of the Department of IT. Oracle has been a vendor on this COTS contract for years and has allowed us to use that contract and has not disagreed with the terms and conditions. Recently, they objected to some of the terms and conditions, and it's currently in negotiations with our AAG, Howard Barr, and Oracle, and I'm told that we're very close to a resolution with Oracle.
Let me just say this, and I get concerned when we say that we have lawyers negotiating business contracts. Have you told the AAG or asked the AAG whether this is an issue that falls under statute, regulation, or precedent? Because that's their role, those three areas. If it is a business decision or the state's policy decision, that is outside their lane. They can tell you where risks are, but they can't stop you from doing business, doing the state's business, unless there's a regulation, statute, or there's precedent, court precedent for this. And many times, and this happens in business, and it happens all over government, state, and federal, that we let the lawyers make the policy decisions, and that should not be the case. So I ask you to make sure that whatever this assistant attorney general is doing, that he or she is making sure that they're in their lane and they're not making the policy decision, because this is a big issue with these terms and conditions where we're limiting competition that is coming on, you know, coming in. And in this case, it looks like, as the comptroller just said, Oracle is saying, oh, we'll work with this guy, but not that guy, when we've made a selection here. But we need to make sure this lawyer's in the lane and that the policy people are making the policy calls, that the procurement shop is making the call saying this provision can be changed based on a policy, and that lawyer is free to give advice as far as what kind of risks are involved, but they can't say yes or no unless it falls in those three areas.
I believe he's only looking at the legal issues, but I will make sure that is the case.
Well, we don't want them to make up legal issues either, you know, and it's legal issues in terms of risk,
right,
not in terms of what you can and can't do. You know, there's one thing to say, hey, you run the risk if you do this, that if you waive this provision and they do this or that or the other, we can't go back after them. That's fine. That's fine for them to say. But it's the policymaker that makes that decision in terms of the risk. So,
What sort of terms and conditions?
I'd have to look up the details.
Do you know, Mark, which ones they were objecting to?
Just off the top of my head, the three big ones were indemnification, liability, and order of precedence.
The unlimited liability, which we've had in many cases, and we've asked the procurement officers that, you know, you have the flexibility to work on that. That particularly comes up with our IT contracts. We saw that with eMaryland Marketplace Advantage, and we were able to make some adjustments there. But there's been a unwritten policy that if it's already in our contracts, we have to keep it there, and that just doesn't make sense. We need to come into the real world, and our people need to make real decisions and not let – lawyers' jobs are to say no. How many lawyers in the house? You know – yeah, lawyers, you know, it's easy to say no. Ah, no, you can't do that. Oh, no, you can't do that. No, you can't do that. That's you know, that's, it's on the bar exam, too. You know, this is, it's not. No, you can't do that. So, but it's the policymaker that has to sit there and assess the risk and make the determination. Otherwise, you never move ahead. Questions? Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, I got my attacking lawyers playing into the business decisions. So. Any other questions on
Secretary? I just want to make clear we have evidence has been, I mean, testimony has been submitted to you, not evidence, testimony has been submitted to the board about the helicopters, the Maryland State Police Aviation Command helicopters, and it's inserted in the record. You also have someone who has asked to speak, but he has written testimony. So I don't know if you want to.
If he could speak briefly.
Mr. Johnson in the room? Is Mr. Dick Johnson?
Good morning.
Good morning.
And thank you for the invitation to be here. I've been involved in this issue for many years. When 139 was part of Bell and part of Augusta. Bell sold their part of the contract to Augusta. But while we're going through the procurement process of getting the 139s, we knew the issues, the problems that 139 has. There's one thing that I need to make clear. Quicker turnaround times do not exist in aviation maintenance. Even if you have a helicopter manufacturer, extended maintenance and parts warranties. There's no such thing as quick turnarounds. That helicopter has to leave the factory in a safe condition. So, using some quotes from the state police, on page 2, we have two aircraft outsourced for heavy inspections. There's no such thing as heavy inspections. Since we are unable to get a definitive answer on what the first two aircraft will be returning, there's no guarantee when they're going to be returned. Once they're out there in Sterling or Mercer or Philadelphia AW factories, they're not going to know what they're going to run into. So that was stated by Major Anthony S. Lohman, commander of the boat on November 22, 2016. Another quote, when the command as of today, 383MD, remains in heavy overhaul. A new aircraft in heavy overhaul? Again, I don't know what they mean by heavy. At Sterling Aviation, repairs require re-engineering. The aircraft, too, has been identified as having problems with the co-pilot door. Add a week or two to return time as of today. 385MD, the forecast thus far, is 4 to 6 weeks for return. 389MD is here at Martin's, waiting on numerous replacement parts. That's going to be a big issue for parts for 139s.
Can I ask you a
yes,
question?
Sir.
I'm not, I mean, and I'm going to be a little more blunt. What is your main point?
There's a solution.
Okay. That's why I'm trying to get to that. I know I was long-winded, and I'm cutting you off, and that's probably not fair, but...
There's multiple solutions to this this issue. One of them, I was talking with ERA Helicopters Incorporated. They're the largest leasers of AW-139s. And I was talking with their senior vice president, and they do have programs where they can have leased to lease back. Purchase the lease back, excuse me. Should the state of Maryland decide to seek proposals for a sale, a lease back, and or operational support of AW-139 fleet, ERA would be very interested in participating in helping out the state of Maryland. So there's a solution. Instead of us being owners,
Right. Let's
lease. Mm-hmm. It's the responsibility of ERA to keep those helicopters maintained. So one goes down, they bring another one in.
Right.
Another option is what we're doing throughout the United States is a lot of your states are using their National Guards for search and rescue, for medevacs, for swift water rescue, for flood rescue. And the good point of that is they're keeping their pilots proficient. They're keeping their crew configuration proficient. We can utilize our own up there in Edgewood. We have 13 UH-60s just sitting there. You have two CH-47s sitting there, and you have four, I think, UH-72s.
You know that better than I do. But they do have to get their flight time in, so that's a good point.
They, to be proficient, and that's one of the crises we're having with our American militaries, even the Marine Corps. Mm-hmm. We're having an issue keeping our guys proficient. They're not getting enough flight time.
Okay.
Another issue, I've been talking with Mr. Redmer regarding air ambulance services in reference to their billing process. But we can utilize the private sector. We had a plan in 2008 that went from the legislature where Air Methods' proposal was $1 million less than the state police. Huh. And we'd be using the money out of the MSOL. pay for those medical.
Is all of that in your documentation?
Right. I do have some bar charts that kind of help explains what's the seriousness of what we're doing here. And in one of the bar charts, I was able to show that 71% of cost from 2011 to 2019, patient being Medevac is less than 28%. So we're down to 1,824 patients being Medevac. And here we are, we're sitting here spending all this money and trying to keep the aircraft going. We've had a lot of near misses. We had a near miss in September, where an AW-139, the pilots, PIC, and an SIC didn't agree with the flight. The aircraft went down, pulled it back up, tore out the transmission of that aircraft. Close call to a crash. And they failed to use Maryland State Police Aviation Risk Management Program, Safety Risk Management Program. They decided to fly it. Instead of going to the closest opening to bring it down, they flew it to Western Maryland and swapped out the Troop 5 and went on to their mission. So we have a toxic issue here, toxic leadership, toxic management, and a toxic culture. Safety should come first. Didn't happen back in September. I know what the state troopers are doing.
Okay.
And they need help. But I don't want to be disrespectful to the state police. I think the legislators set them up for failure with the 139, and they're proving it. It's a failure. So we need to look at other options.
Okay.
Lisa.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay.
We'll take this opportunity. I was hoping that the governor was going to be here. I want to thank him on signing that Senate Bill 80 back in 2015. We had our Gilchrist second annual Welcome Home Vietnam Veterans Day celebration. And I just saw he wasn't here. And he didn't have the time to listen to the praises that he got.
Oh, okay. Well, I will pass that on to him and let him know how much you appreciate that. He's very proud. Yeah, he is very proud of that.
Okay.
Well, thank you.
I like one.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we have a motion on the Secretary's agenda.
Move approval.
Okay. We're all in favor.
Thank you.
Natural Resources.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, Jeannie Hadaway Riccio, Secretary of the Department of Natural Resources. And we have 15 items on our real property agenda today. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
I'm happy to see in item 4A, I guess we still have some people moving around. That Garrett County is getting a substantial amount of projects taken care of there. Sometimes Garrett County gets forgotten. They're in the Pittsburgh media market, so they don't see what happens down here very often. But I'm glad to see that they are getting a good share of program open space funding. And I was particularly interested in the Kitzmiller Town Park volleyball court. I don't know if anyone here has been to Kitzmiller. Yes, and we went to a wonderful restaurant there in Kitzmiller. And, you know, to paraphrase a former vice presidential candidate, you can see West Virginia from there, literally. I mean, you walk across the street and you're in West Virginia. We were out there for, I don't know if you all know that I'm doing a park tour to hit our 75 parks. The good secretary keeps adding parks, so I don't know if I'm going to get to all of the parks, but, we were out there for, some of the parks in, Garrett County. I don't think I went to any place last month, but I'm looking at February to go out west to do snowshoeing or something of that nature. So, but I just wanted to point out the program open space. Also in 9A, $2.6 million, almost $2.7 million program open space to Baltimore City, a number of park improvements and athletic fields throughout the city, very well needed. That's in addition to last Board of Public Works. There was rec centers being opened. So the state is doing a lot to help Baltimore City. And I know we sometimes get criticism from the cranky pants people around that say, oh, you're not doing anything for Baltimore City. You know, and there's a concern about rec centers, which is needed there. And we are providing a lot of support to help in that area. So appreciate that. I do have a substantive question. In 13A, rural legacy funding for conservation easement, I guess I don't understand why we need a land conservancy to hold the easement and why the county doesn't hold it or DNR doesn't hold the easement. I know in the case of Harford County, Harford County will hold the easement in many cases. I think the next item, 14, Harford County is holding the easement on this is rural legacy. Why do we have to go through this process?
So I think a lot of times it depends on the preference of the landowner. Some landowners are more willing to enter into easements with government entities than others. I'm not saying that this was necessarily the case here. But working with partners like Eastern Shore Land Conservancy and other land conservation organizations also helps us to leverage more dollars.
Okay. All right. I know that in some cases they actually find the land and bring it to the attention of the state, where there may be some opportunities too. I didn't know, like when I looked at this particular one and then looked at the one in Harford County, and it's like the county's holding it versus, you know, a separate entity holding the conservation easement.
So in this case, we are holding an easement jointly with Eastern Shore Land Conservancy.
Okay. But I guess it's just a preference of that landowner that they want to work with the conservancy versus just the state or just the county. If you mind.
Yeah, sure.
If you may.
Good morning. Julie Wilson with Maryland Department of Natural Resources. Our Rural Legacy Program is set up with local sponsors. So each rural legacy area across the state is sponsored by a local entity, and that's designed as a grassroots kind of bottom-up program. Mm-hmm. And Eastern Shore Land Conservancy is our local sponsor in that area. We will co-hold the easements with a land trust to have a government entity, have that security of the government entity holding those easements. In the case of Harford County, the county itself is actually our local sponsor for that rural legacy area. So that's why they hold that easement too.
All right. Okay, that's very helpful. That's, because I, you know, you see, and some of the other programs, it's done similar as well. And so I guess they're sponsors for those as well, and they're local, and that's where you go to a conservancy versus the county versus the state holding it. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions on natural resources?
No. Move approval unless the treasurer has comments.
Okay. One second. Okay. We're all in favor. Thank you. And invite anyone to come with us on our park tours. It's a great, you know, great opportunity to see what the state has to offer. Very inexpensive entertainment, family entertainment, where you're not, you know, a creepy guy going to the children's museum. You can go to the parks. No age limit or age restrictions.
Send us your calendar.
Okay. I'll let you know. You want to go to the winter one?
Maybe.
Yeah, that's fun.
Winter.
You'll probably have to. And some of the parks have cabins, just to let you know. You do have to make reservations, and they're not super rustic. There are some places where they're rustic. They're kind of campground type of. But many of them, you know, have air conditioning and heat and electricity and flush toilet inside the building. So, yeah, it's very nice. Very nice. Okay, transportation.
Thank you, sir. Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, my name is Sean Powell, Deputy Secretary for the Maryland Department of Transportation. The Maryland Department of Transportation is presenting six items today. Items 4M and 6GM are being withdrawn, leaving four items for your consideration. We do have representatives available if you have any questions.
Item 1M, I just want to thank you for putting it in the small business reserve. Or this is a small business preference, but not the small business reserve. But I do want to thank the Aviation Administration for utilizing that.
Thank you.
I have a question on 3C MTA. I just want to understand how that was, this transaction took place.
Okay. We have a representative coming up now, sir.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Joe Sedatol. I'm the director of procurement at MTA, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Yes. Now, I understand that this is this was a deal worked out with the Maryland National Capital Parks and Planning Commission where we're acquiring their building, and then we're fixing their other building. How did that?
So they had an old building that was basically beyond use. And so in exchange for us taking over their building for the Purple Line project, we agreed to repair their old building and make it their new principal maintenance facility.
Okay. So did they give us the other building?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, okay. I was unsure if we were buying the other building and then fixing their other building that they're getting, they're double dipping.
It was an exchange.
It was an exchange. Okay. Very good. Okay. That was completely, unless anyone else has a question on that one.
Thank you.
Thank you. On State Highways Maintenance Contract, and this, it's a single bid, but I think this is a question more for Mike Zimmerman over there, who's hiding.
And sir, this is one that we've withdrawn this one.
Oh, you did withdraw 4M? Okay.
If you have additional questions, if we bring it forward, we'll get back to you.
Okay. The question had to do with the low bid being rejected due to errors in the bid, and I thought that we tried to address that in the procurement reform commission. So, Mike, maybe you can just remind me of what we were doing in the...
Sure. For the record, Mike Zimmerman, Maryland Department of Transportation. This is a little different in that the vendor actually submitted a minority business that wasn't a registered minority business.
Okay. So it was more than a mistake.
Correct. It's not
good. Okay. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Questions on transportation?
Move approval.
Okay. Okay. That was it, because unless we want to do DGS again. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.